When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Texans-Jags coming up on Sunday. The Texans lost to the Titans this past Sunday. That's relevant for our next conversation here, because joining us right now on the hotline, he was on the call for this game with CBS. He's our Odyssey NFL insider, and his name is Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, it's great to talk to you. It was great seeing you here in Houston last week. How did Houston treat you? How was your trip overall?
Well, likewise. It was great, man. I love Houston. It was awesome. I mean, the hotel was nice. It was great hanging with you at Tom's Watch Bar Thursday night. It was nice. The weather was nice for us as we're watching Pittsburgh and Cleveland play in the snow. Mm-hmm. And then the Texans, very hospitable on Friday, going to practice, everything. The worst part of the weekend for me was Friday night. I went to the Houston Cougars basketball game, but my high school team went into overtime. So I spent most of the game just looking at my phone. and then they blew it in overtime. So that was, disheartening. But then Saturday, I don't know. Well, we went to the hotel, the Titans hotel. We walked by like an ice skating rink and like an outdoor festival or something. Wow. And then the hotel where we at had like a lazy river on the sixth floor where the Titans were staying. And then the key to the whole weekend was the Texans press box food.
Bingo.
It is spectacular. I mean, I have them now number one in the NFL.
Yes.
And not only that, I don't know if Cal McNair is listening or not. I am thoroughly impressed by the entire organization, and in particular, the game day experience. I don't know if it's like this for you guys, but everybody, as we went through security, and you know how now you have to go through all these different like things where you have to show your badge, mm-hmm. your face or whatever. Everybody was so nice, smiling, friendly. Happy game day. Have a great game day. It was really nice. It's not like that in other cities. I don't, you know, that's a culture thing, I guess, with your organization. It's very well done. It's noticeable. So shout out to Cal McNair and the entire organization. It's very, very impressive, both the food and the hospitality.
The only thing I feel bad about for some of those people is that on my game day activities, where Ross, as you know, I was sick this last week, so I wasn't there, I end up passing the same people like 10 times, and they're very committed to the bit. So they gave me the same emphatic greeting every single time, and I feel bad for them because they know. They're like, hey, listen, Seth, I got to say it, okay? I got to say it. let me ask you this. For the vast majority of people listening, should they care more about whether the Texans are offering up good press box food or whether they're putting a competent offense on the field?
Hmm. I would say the latter. Press box food does not affect almost anyone listening. Other than
a pretty healthy majority,
guys.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was surprising to me, I would say. And if you're a Texans fan, certainly disappointing. I mean, it's unbelievable. They get that awesome kickoff return. Then the Titans drop a coverage, and you're like, okay, bam, here we go. 7-0. And then you get a pick six from Jimmy Ward, who's filling in for Petrie, you know, one of your best players. You need to win that game. You know what I mean? Like, go through some of the things. You have 8 sacks, including 7 in the first half. You score on your first play of the game. You have a pick six. That's rough to lose that game.
Yes.
You know, given everything I just said, that is rough to then lose that football game. But you give up chunk plays like they did defensively, you're gonna. I mean, Eric Murray gets beat on a double move by Westbrook Akine. You give up the deep post to Ridley. Nobody can tackle Okonkwo. You know, the Titans surprisingly ran the ball much better than the Texans. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest concern I'd have if I were a Texans fan isn't that they lost to the Titans. It's that it wasn't a fluke, like, at all. I mean, that the Titans were the better team in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said that up in the press box, Ross, with the, you know, the guys I was sitting with. I said, by the end of that game, I said, If you had somebody, a football fan, watch that game, but they didn't know the records of the two teams, and then after the game was over, you said, pick the team that was 7-4, pick the team that was 2-8 going into this game, I wouldn't have been able, I would have just said, I don't know. They looked like two very evenly matched teams in that game. You know what I mean?
No question. Yeah. In fairness, I will say, this happens in the NFL sometimes, right? Like, the Cleveland Browns have 3 wins. 2 of those wins are against teams that are in the top 7 of the all-important Ross Tucker Football Podcast power rankings. So think about that. Like, the Browns only have 3 wins. One was against the Ravens. One was against the Steelers.
Yeah.
So this happens where sometimes the other team plays well. Sometimes the other team has a really good plan. Obviously, the Titans came out and did some really positive things. Levis clearly has been better the last 3 games than he was before that. And I'd also say, on some level, if you're the Texans, they've played so many one-score games at home, one-score games in the division, they were kind of winning more than their fair share of those.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they were winning a high percentage of close games. Now, I think that there's certain traits to that, and certain teams are better at closing those games out than others. But if you're going to play with fire that often, you're going to get burnt sometimes. Obviously, the Fairbairn missed chip shot stunned all of us. And, you know, they might have won the game in overtime after that. But it's not like you watch that game and think, you know, Texans got a raw deal. Texans should have won that game. Like, no. I mean, game could have gone either way. And frankly, you know, you have CJ throw 2 interceptions like that in your own territory. They really probably could have lost by more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where, you know, if you go back to the Texans versus the Lions, if the Texans had beat the Lions, you talk about a close game, et cetera, it would have been a flukish game. You know, you pick off Jared Goff 5 times, and credit to the Texans defense for doing that, but you end up losing that game with a +3 turnover margin. And the Texans look like a worse team than the Lions in that game. Like, they did not look like evenly matched teams. And it all comes back to offensive incompetence. So when we're looking, this is where we are on it, Ross, right now. It's why we're excited to have you in, because we know you watched a bunch of Titans film and Texans film leading into the game. It's that, all right, CJ is clearly not himself, not the same guy he was last year. And yet, I don't see Bobby Slowick or the rest of the offense doing a lot to help him be that guy. So we're at this point where we're trying to figure out, all right, has CJ definitively regressed, or is it the matter of just a completely inept offense surrounding him?
Yeah, I don't think he's playing as well as he did last year. Now, I thought he did some really nice things at times. You know, I thought there were times where he maneuvered the pocket, certainly way better than Levis did. I mean, I felt bad, but Levis took so many sacks that he shouldn't have. It was driving me bananas.
You were carrying a lot of water for the Titans offensive line in that broadcast.
For the Titans off, you think?
Oh, yeah, well, at one point you had blamed them for like 5 of the 7 sacks, I think. Or you had blamed Will Levis for pretty much all the sacks. That was the only thing I disagreed with you on during the broadcast.
5 of the 8 or 4 of the 7 at one point, I put more on Levis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. There was 3 where I felt like Titans offensive linemen were beat, you know, by Hunter or Will Anderson or whatever, and it was clearly on them. You know, it's probably, we all have like our own bias, right? I am biased against quarterbacks that run themselves into sacks. Literally step up into a sack. No, thank you, Will Levis. At any rate,
he did a lot of positive things.
But Stroud, getting back to Stroud. Stroud, I thought, he had some awesome plays where he would like step up in the pocket, maneuver, and then pinpoint accuracy. But, you know, there's a couple things that jumped out. You know, the throw to Mechie, they weren't on the same page. Yeah. And I know that happens sometimes, but it feels like that's happening more often with the Texans this year than last year, which is weird, where he's kind of not really in sync with his receiver. And then the other one, I mean, he said it after the game, I give him a lot of credit, he just needs to put more air under it or get it over. That's a bad throw. But I think maybe more concerning, there was how many, like 2 or 3, maybe 3 or 4 others where he was just off.
Yeah.
You know, and I just remember thinking, boy, you didn't see that. I don't remember seeing that very often from him the year before. And then making matters worse, they really couldn't run it very effectively at all. And that's kind of what they've leaned on with the passing game not being where they want to be. They've leaned on the running game more and Mixon. But with Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, that's a tough group to run against. And it felt like, again, they were kind of running themselves into a wall on some of the early downs, and then it would put them in the third and longer situations. Just a bad formula right now.
Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. You had a follow-up you wanted to hit him with, Seth, here.
Oh, I did? Yeah. Okay, well, just the offensive line in general, because you are a former offensive lineman. How much of the offensive line ineptitude right now do you put on the individuals versus what Bobby Slowick is asking them to do?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't come away from that game thinking that they played really bad. I mean, I kind of knew it was inevitable at some point that Jeffrey Simmons would probably beat Juice Scruggs for a sack, and he did. Man, that Tavondre Sweat guy, that is a big human being. Holy cow, for the Titans. But honestly, I didn't come away thinking it was a horrible performance by the Texans' offensive line. I mean, I would say it was average, and I think based on how they played this year, I think you'd probably take average. I think the biggest issue is they just really were not able to run the ball very effectively. And it feels like when the Texans are in obvious passing downs this year, they're struggling. It's too many third and longs. It's too many situations where, you know, Stroud doesn't often seem like he feels comfortable in the pocket even when the protection's there. Yeah. That makes sense. It's almost like the lack of protection in some way has gotten him to the point where he's a little bit skittish.
Yeah.
You know, the Titans D coordinator said, we got to get people around his feet, which is an interesting way to phrase it. But the point being, we got to make him a little uncomfortable. And I think that's what they did. Even if they didn't rack up big sacks, it feels like he's just not a comfortable, as Greg Cosell would say on a Thursday edition of the Ross Tucker podcast, he's not a comfortable player right now.
No, he got really damaged by those three games. I think it was week 7, 8, and 9. It was Green Bay, Indy, and then the Jets game on Thursday night, where the pressure rates, Ross, were like 55-57% pressure, and he was getting waylaid in those games. I'm curious, big picture, Ross. The Texans are 7-5. The Colts are 5-7. They're both 1-3 since they played each other a few weeks ago. So the Colts have not been able to take advantage of the Texans' recent stretch of futility here. Five games to go, and the Texans got one of those stretches coming up at Christmas time where they play three games in 11 days against good teams. How much danger are the Texans in right now of coughing up this division, do you think?
Not much.
Okay.
I I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Anthony Richardson is so up and down mm-hmm. that it's hard for me to picture the Colts going anything but like 500 down the stretch, right? Like, if things are going well for Richardson, I still think in, you know, their last five games that they go 3-2 at best.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably puts them at 8-9. Yeah. The Texans are not going to blow that. As I said, though, at the very start of the broadcast, and I'll repeat with you guys, I think the goals for the Texans should be bigger than that. I mean, they won the division last year. Yeah. They won a playoff game last year. The question for the Texans is whether or not they're a legitimate contender in the AFC. And I think the answer right now is pretty clearly no,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, against the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens, the Steelers, even the Steelers. Like, I wouldn't pick the Texans to win those games. To me, they're more in the second tier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like it's Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, and then maybe the Steelers. And then there's the next tier, which is like Chargers, Broncos, Texans, and I would even put the Dolphins in there right now, the way they're playing. Feels like the feel like that's the category that the Texans find themselves in, tier two, which isn't like the worst place to be, but they were kind of tier two last year. Mm-hmm. And you'd like to think with the additions that Caserio's made, I mean, obviously the Diggs injury's unfortunate, but you bring in Danielle Hunter, they've got some rookies, Lassiter and Bullock, playing really well. I mean, that's the thing that would be so maddening to me if I'm a Texans fan, is they've actually brought in several new players, Al Shire from last year, that are playing pretty well, and yet they're not better. It's not a great look for the coaching staff, to be honest with you.
No, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Well, Ross, three of those teams you just named, Dolphins, Chiefs, Ravens, they play within a week and a half, all three of those teams after the bye week. So we'll get a pretty clear picture of who the Texans are and what tier they're in as the postseason hits us, for sure. Where are you at this week, Ross, during Thanksgiving? You get any time off, or are you a road warrior again this week?
Never. Yeah, never time it. Off.
Yeah.
I will leave tomorrow because I got a Black Friday game on Big CBS. It's the Bill Walsh legacy game. It's Stanford at San Jose State. I didn't think it actually had a name, so I was making up a rivalry. I was saying that it was the Silicon Valley showdown,
okay,
and that they would battle for the almighty microchip. But evidently, like, it's actually the Bill Walsh legacy game. And then Sunday night, I'm in the booth for radio, Niners and Bills, Westwood One.
Awesome. Okay, so you're spending, and I'm assuming, is that one in Buffalo or is that in San Francisco? Are you out in the Bay Area all
Buffalo.
Week long?
Actually, that would have been nice, right?
Yeah,
to be able to just stay there.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can, I might text the Niners, see if I can get on the team charter.
That'd be beautiful.
From the Bay Area to Buffalo. Save me a whole lot of frustration.
Yes, yes, yes. And then fire up a video of whatever the food spread is on the charter, too, and see how the Niners compare.
Yeah, one time I was able to fly on a team charter and they said, two things. Number one, don't tell anybody. And number two, if there's a fight, definitely don't tell anybody.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Hey, Ross, we appreciate the time as always. Very happy Thanksgiving, and we look forward to catching up with you next week. Safe travels.
Likewise, fellas. Mayo, rest of the show be delicious.
It will be. Don't worry. Appreciate you, Ross Tucker.
Boy.
He is our Odyssey NFL insider. Insider calls, as he just mentioned. Brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
I don't know what the commercial feed was like for other people or not, but on my YouTube TV, I got so many Will Levis commercials during that game.
Oh, yeah?
Like so many Will Levis commercials. It was driving me insane, and yet it also made me want mayonnaise, which is weird.
They're good commercials.
Not something you typically like, oh, I need some mayonnaise. And like, I didn't even really, like, without even, like, I don't know, with what, some poutine or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted mayonnaise.
Yeah, man.
It was working.
Power
it
of
was
advertising.
Working.
Power of advertising.
Okay, so this is where Ross and I disagree a little bit, is I think Ross is, as he admitted, he's got a natural bias towards offensive linemen. You know, he didn't want to blame the offensive line, and yet at the same time, he was blaming the lack of a run game, which was 100% completely and totally, at least partly because the offensive line can't be trusted to
block. No doubt.
So in the run game, so we'll get to the pass game. In the run game, I'm just sitting here, I'm watching a play, a zone run to the Texans' left. Oh, this is when they were in the red zone. And, you know, my first thought was, I was watching the end zone copy. I was like, well, this is a loaded box. So let's zoom back out a little bit. Oh, it's a loaded box. Even though the Titans are playing cover two, it's a loaded box because Bobby's got all 11 offensive players jumbled in a nucleus right around the football. And four Texans players play side get absolutely destroyed. Joe Mixon doesn't have a single chance. The linebackers know the ball is going to come back, so they don't even bother playing front side, and they just swarm. They just swarm Joe Mixon. Like, that's they're incapable of performing their bread and butter scheme because of the physical inadequacies, because of the actual play call itself, because down in the red zone, Bobby Slowe doesn't really give CJ a lot of easy options. Like, a lot of the stuff, as the game goes on, you just start wondering, wait a second, I watched the Lions, I watch these other teams, and guys are getting schemed wide open at times.
Yeah.
And they did it. They'll do it early in the game. The Texans do it early in the game. The throwback to Tank Dell, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't it doesn't translate through four quarters of football.
Do you think maybe they should make a request to the league, and after the first quarter is over, say, can we play the second quarter tomorrow? Can you give us a day? And then after the second quarter's over, they can say, can we make halftime a full day also? And just play the game over the course of 4 days. That'll give Bobby and the offensive staff plenty of time to scheme up some really good plays for the second quarter. And
well, yeah,
and
he's
the
like Bobby's like a kid that needs extra time for the test.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he's got medical needs or what have you. So,
right.
Yeah, he gets extra time for the test. Yeah,
I mean,
we're at that point. We need to request the league. Like, we'll make this look real ugly for you, NFL.
Yeah.
If you're not going to address Bobby Slowick's intellectual, you know, challenges, then, you know, that's on you.
Right.
I'll cite the ADA and everything else.
Right. I mean, it can't hurt to ask. I mean, all they can do is say no, right? You know? Yeah. So, man, it's frustrating.
The
picture you illustrate just by talking about that play and Ross talking about what he saw on Sunday, I have zero confidence this is going to get fixed this season. You know, like my fear is this is what it's going to look like the rest of the season, and that CJ's regression that he's experiencing right now, that the best case scenario is that he just sort of holds right here. You know what I mean? Like, that he realizes, okay, this is impact, you know, like, all the deficiencies on the offense have impacted me to some degree, and that changes get made this offseason, whether it's with personnel or whether it's with the coaching staff. And that CJ, who I think is equipped to handle the ups and downs like this, that's the good news. We have a texter texting in, 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. Someone's texting in comparing CJ Stroud to Carson Wentz, which is an interesting analogy because when Carson Wentz didn't do it as a rookie, but his second year in the league in 2017, the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl, yeah. If Carson Wentz doesn't get hurt, he's the MVP of the league that year. And he went backwards ever since that year.
Yeah.
I think CJ, well, first of all, if whatever you read about Carson Wentz behind the scenes, CJ ain't that. Like, CJ is a supreme leader behind. I think CJ is equipped to handle what he's going through right now way better than Carson Wentz was.
CJ operates at a mental level way more advanced than Carson Wentz ever did. Plus, right. Carson Wentz had that Jameis Winston in him, young Jameis Winston at least, of just making some idiotic bad decisions. Yeah. Really, really bad. He was like Will Levis. He never stopped being young Will Levis when Will Levis would make these boneheaded decisions. I say young Will Levis. I'm talking about week one of this season. Levis doesn't look as stupid anymore, you know? So when Ross is talking about how CJ feels like even when he gets good pass protection, it doesn't look like he trusts it. Or maybe, you know, the clock in his head is a little disrupted. Yeah, that's 100%. It's kind of like when somebody who's really sarcastic gives you a compliment. You end up like hyper-analyzing whether it's actually a compliment or not. And then all of a sudden you've screwed up the rest of your life. That's what CJ with good pass protection. I feel like he's kind of like, wait, can I accept this compliment? Or
right,
not?
Right.
Is this, wait a second. And then all of a sudden he's sacked. Or he makes a bad decision.
Yeah.
And I'm not making excuses for him. Ultimately, it's on him.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a trust level in him and how he's operating right now. And CJ, to his credit, has said all the right things about guys need to buy into the system, guys need to trust the play call, guys need to do this, guys need to do that. And I think CJ, I would suspect that CJ genuinely believes that. Like, he's saying, look, I'm not going to fix anything by complaining. I'm not going to fix anything by making excuses. We got to just all be on the same page. But for us, they don't have skin in the game as observers. It's becoming brazenly clear that whatever issues there are, there's too many issues across the board in terms of execution, play calling, et cetera, to not consider a change at offensive coordinator.
100%.
If you're D'Amico, it's malpractice if you're not considering a change in coordinator during the bye week.
Yeah.
You got one more week here. And it's go time.
Yeah.
There's only so many things you can fix. And the biggest, most glaring potential thing that you can fix, you can't go out and get new players right now.
Nope.
You can't trade for anybody. There's very little you can do on the player side. There's one big change you can make that's who's calling the plays, who's crafting the game plan, all of that. That you've got to, at the very least, consider, or it's malpractice.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and even if they win against Jacksonville this Sunday, like, if they win, but the offense is still doing what it's been doing, not scoring in the second half, not able to run the football, but they win the game. That's my fear, is if they put up a performance on Sunday, again, great point, bye week coming up, perfect time to do something like that, Seth. That's take advantage of the bye week if you need to make changes. That's my fear, is this whole a win's a win mentality. Like, yeah. That, like, at least that's the rhetoric. You know, like, hey, man, it's hard to win, and a win is a win. Well, no. I mean, I know D'Amico knows this. Like, no, there's a lot of stuff that needs to get fixed even when you're winning football games, especially close football games against bad teams, right? Yeah, like Jacksonville.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing about the Titans game was, and we said this going into the game, was, okay, the Titans are a bad team, but they present some challenges for the Texans that even if the Texans won by 21 points,
yeah.
I could have looked at some of the matchups and looked ahead to see, okay, they got away with this. They didn't get, so and what's so disheartening about this loss was that, yes, the Texans lost the game, but the very specific things that I was worried about that I'd be able to learn from a game against a 2-win football team, all of them the Texans lost. You know, how's the Texans' interior offensive line going to fare versus really good defensive tackles? Mm-hmm. Turns out, to the surprise of very few people,
right.
I had talked myself into optimism. Turns out, no, they did not answer that test. Can the Texans' defense keep Will Levis from being the guy that he had been in the 2 weeks leading into this game? He looked like a smarter quarterback. It looked like he wasn't damaging his own team, but he was still capable of eviscerating teams downfield. That came up big. So I've got concerns about the secondary, and now Jalen Petrie's out.
Mm-hmm.
That reared its ugly head too. Can the Texans not hurt themselves with penalties the way they had done with Nico Collins in the previous week? Turns out, no. They are hell-bent on destroying Nico Collins' greatness by calling his big plays back with idiotic penalties.
Yep.
Like, so all of these things, even if the Texans had won by 21 points because of a couple big plays or something, I wouldn't have felt good about any of these things coming out of that Titans game. So that's the really alarming break glass in case of emergency. All that stuff, they've run out of time. You've got to make a change. You cannot trust Bobby Slowick to do it.
Mm. Chris Long, former defensive lineman, Greenlight Podcast. He's on Inside the NFL as well. We play a lot of his audio, and you guys know Chris Long. Really, really good stuff. This was making the rounds last night. He talked extensively about C.J. Stroud, the Texans' offense. Here is Chris Long. We got a couple cuts here. Here's Chris Long first saying that C.J. Stroud is damaged right now.
He looked like the next Joe Montana, and I still think he's got, you know, that rare ability in him. I'm not putting him with Joe Montana, but you know what I'm saying. They have done everything in their power this year to stunt the kid's development. I mean, his eyes are on the rush, mm-hmm. you know, and like you could say, hey, keep your eyes downfield. But after 12 games of it, it's a survival tactic yep. to know who's falling at your feet, to know who's not picking up a game.
Yeah.
Nico Collins has 2 touchdowns in a week called back on dumb penalties. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them yesterday is an illegal motion. Mixon and the receiver in motion at the same time, and like they knew it right away. Did you see it on CJ Stroud's face?
Yeah, I mean, I said it to Ross, I'll say it again. I think the 3 games, Green Bay, Indianapolis here, the Jets, that's when it started to turn. That's when that's when this version of CJ Stroud started showing up with jittery feet, I won't say poor decision-making, but certainly not the level of decision-making we saw last season. Certain poor decisions made, not just all the time, but he's thrown 9 interceptions in 12 games. He threw 5 through the whole season last year. So by definition, poor decisions, or at least not throwing the ball like he was last year. And they haven't done... Who knows if Kenyon Green would still be out there if he hadn't gotten hurt. You know, like that,
right,
that was
right,
the part to me during that 3-game stretch, like... There were changes available to you, and they weren't making them. And that's the scary thing, I think, for Texan fans, is the answer always seems to be, with D'Amico and with Bobby both, is we just got to go back and we got to work. You know, we got to go execute. You know, like...
Yeah, and it's good to have faith in your people and understand that there's going to be time in which they need to develop, but you're sitting here in the second year of a regression by C.J. Stroud. And, well, it's the first year of a regression, but you're in his second year. And you just wonder, okay, if D'Amico had, let's say D'Amico had been hired, but it was one of those situations where, all right, he inherits Bobby Slowick, you know, and so he's got no emotional ties to him whatsoever, no history with him. At what point in this season is D'Amico going to start thinking, all right, well, this guy's just too green at this point, and whatever fixes need to be made, Bobby is clearly not getting it done. I don't think an impartial coach or a guy that, you know, had no prior experience with him would be giving Bobby Slowick a vote of confidence at this point. And this is where it's hard. It's hard for a head coach, man. This is when you become a true NFL head coach when you start firing your friends.
Absolutely.
You look at last night. Hey, I mean, the Ravens, you know, the Ravens had great success early on with Greg Roman as the offensive coordinator, and then it fizzled. And then they probably waited way too long to swap out offensive coordinators. Mm-hmm. But, you know, John Harbaugh, not an offensive coordinator. He's a special teams guy. So kind of like a lot like D'Amico. He's the overseer of the entire team. It's his job to get the right offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And if they had stuck with Greg Roman, I think, look, Roman's doing great things for the Chargers right now, but it just wasn't the right fit anymore with the Ravens. You can't drag your feet out forever making decisions on stuff like this.
Let's hear from Chris Long on that very topic, because Chris Long, Greenlight Podcast, said, kind of echoing what Seth just said.
Well, yeah. And this is him discussing what the Texans need to discuss during the bye week and after the Jags game.
So they haven't played their Jacksonville, bye. Then they have a bye.
And I know he's tight with the quarterback coach, right? I know there's other guys that are in the building and call plays, right? Like, did we look at that as Bill Lazor?
Yeah.
Is there? He's called some plays in the NFL before. But they have to have a conversation about the play calling, because the play calling is not good. And I've seen teams work around worse offensive lines. There are some decent players, guys who have played good ball in the past on this offensive line, but they're not playing together. And they're not, and they're doing unsound shit. They're pulling Shaq Mason to pick up an edge guy who's screaming off the edge. He's tiptoeing. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, you've got, you giving up a sack to Devondre Sweat. The guy hadn't had a sack since Jesus was a baby. And you're giving up a sack to that guy. He's 380 pounds. How do you give up a sack to a 400-pound guy late in a down?
Yeah. He named a few of the options there. You know, they, when Chris Long said there, he's tight with the quarterback's coach. He is CJ, I'm sure. And the quarterback's coach, obviously, is Gerard Johnson. So he's listing him as an option. Bill Lazor, who you've got great familiarity with, as an option.
Who I don't talk to. Like, as I told Bill when they hired him, like, hey, listen, man, when I have friends on the staff, they don't hear from me because I never want anything. When Bill Lazor's name starts coming up, I don't want to be attached to it.
Right.
So, yeah, because this is the type of stuff that happens. But Bill Lazor has experience as an offensive coordinator. Gerard Johnson thought very highly of. There's guys on staff that might just flat out. Are there going to be guys that do a worse job than Bobby Slowick right now?
This is a little bit like the Kenyon Green argument, right? Green was failing at left guard, and there's some people are like, well, all you got is Kendrick Green and Jarrett Patterson. It's like, yeah, their best quality is they're not Kenyon Green. Like, Kenyon Green, 77th out of 77 guards on Pro Football Focus. You literally can't do any worse according to that metric. Bobby Slowick, considering what he has in terms of material, is at the bottom of the barrel of offensive coordinators this season. There's just no other way. You have the offensive rookie of the year as a quarterback who has gone backwards and who has been damaged in no small part because of a scheme and an offensive line that you continue to trot out there that's coached by the same guy all season, a guy who wasn't part. I mean, this goes back now to last season. Like, why were you hiring a guy to coach the offensive line who'd never been in this system before? That's rearing its ugly head now. So, yeah, like, you're absolutely right, Seth. I would say, like, Gerard Johnson can't do worse. Bill Lazor can't do. Hell, I'd say Ben McDaniels, I think, got to call some plays during training camp. Like, he can't do worse than the Texans are doing right now, running Joe Mixon into a brick wall and setting up third and 12 on the regular.
I'll tell you another thing on that play that I was just talking about where everybody gets destroyed. Part of it is, okay, like Jeffrey Simmons is beating. Jeffrey Simmons having a really good rep versus the center. You're going to expect that. It wasn't like, I'm not sitting there thinking like, I can't believe Patterson got beat on the. Man. That was like, he was losing the down, but it wasn't atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
It's Laremy Tunsil. Like, these people that love pointing out Laremy Tunsil, they hate PFF grades unless they're pointing out that Laremy Tunsil's got really good pass blocking grades. But meanwhile, they ignore the fact that he just doesn't give a damn in the run game. Like, on that play, he just flat out says, like, I'm going to turn this out. Oh, I have to block Arden Key. This is hard. I'm just going to turn out on it and reduce. I'm just going to force it to the outside and basically make the tackle for the linebackers. So he gets destroyed by Arden Key on that play. Xavier Hutchinson's he's trying to block, but he's not Deebo Samuel. You know, like, they've only got one guy on this team. The wide receivers all try to block. I give them credit for that. They're not as lazy. The wide receivers care more about run blocking than some of the offensive linemen do. But they're not good at it. They're not good at it.
Right.
So other than Nico, really, when it comes down to crunch time, I guess that's one of the other big questions. Can you actually get these offensive tackles to play the way that they're being paid?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's not a. I can't blame Bobby Slowick for that, but maybe one of the other offensive. Maybe another offensive coordinator would know how to tweak those guys the right way. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Get in their head.
Drew Scruggs is just a mess. Honestly, what did they? This is another what did they expect moment. You've seen him at left guard,
right?
And I know you trust Patterson more with the calls, et cetera, and everything like that, but, man, God, they've got no options at left guard and haven't had them all year.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. You can text us 713-572-4610. That's the 5-Hour Energy fan line. That's a good way to weigh in. Top of the hour, Tuesday Pettycast. We got plenty of petty to get to at the top of the hour. There was a signing in baseball yesterday. The Astros didn't have a bunch of dead money on the books. Is this a deal you think they would have done or should they have done heading into next season? We'll talk about that, and we'll get back to the Texans as well. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, it's bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We've been pretty lucky in this town. This thought just crossed my mind as we're about to talk about the Astros for a few minutes here. We've been pretty lucky with our teams that, generally speaking, over the last few years, they've gone into the offseason with a ton of flexibility and ability to improve the team. You know, the Rockets, and with the Texans and the Rockets, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're young teams that don't have that until recently don't have a lot of expensive guys on the roster. But a couple years ago when the Rockets had all that cap space, like, yeah, go get Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and add them to these young guys. And they just signed extensions with Şengün and Green. Like, they've had all this flexibility to make moves. Similarly, the Texans last year. Yeah, Danielle Hunter, Joe Mixon, trade for Diggs, all this stuff. And the Astros, we've kind of, for a team that's been expensive, by and large, until a couple of years ago, we were living in that world. We ain't living in that world anymore with the Astros, man. We ain't living in that world. They've got all this dead money on the books. Abreu, $19 million, still counts for this year. Montero, $11 million. McCullers,
yay,
$17 million. And I know Lance could be back. I saw video.
Yay!
That I think Michael Schwab posted of Lance McCullers.
Why did you invite all that hate onto the text line by saying Lance could be back this year?
It's a non-zero possibility, I guess.
It is. I know. We're in that mode. You know what? Boy, how awesome a story would that be if Lance McCullers ends up staying healthy for the next 10 years?
That would be beautiful.
Used as a long reliever, whatever it might be. Give up on the whole starting
Lance
thing?
Ain't. Lance,
I don't know. Maybe this will be the year. He's like, okay, yeah, you know what? Let's try to make it through the whole season.
$17 million for McCullers. Javier is, I believe, around 12 or 13. You know, I'm not counting on Javier. The way these things have gone with all these Tommy John guys, I get angry when I hear people like, Javier could be back later on in the season this year. Oh, you mean like Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers last year?
So Javier and Urquidy both are the guys that are big X factors.
Well, Urquidy's not on the Astros anymore.
Yeah, excuse me, sorry. But as far as X factors, just flat out, yeah, okay, maybe, but I'm not going to bank on it.
But yes, absolutely. That's $60 million right there for guys that either are gone or the possession arrow has historically been pointed against them pitching for you. I don't know, you know, so that's going to impact Jim Crane's ability to do, you would think, do some of the things that he wants to do. Anytime he's asked about it, he still leaves open the door that they could pay luxury tax, and they have it. They did this past season, but it gets really punitive when you start doing it multiple years consecutively in baseball.
Yeah.
And I'm skeptical that they have the appetite to do that. Yusei Kikuchi signed with the Angels yesterday, 3 years, $63 million, $21 million a year for a guy who was really, really good for the Astros in the second half of the season. He was excellent. And yet that feels like a deal. I don't know that the Astros would have made that deal with Kikuchi even if they didn't have all this dead money on the books. You know. They've not been in the business of retaining the pitchers that they've rehabbed. They've been in the business of rehabbing those. When I say rehab, I mean like getting them from a 5 ERA to a 2.5 ERA because they're Astros. You know,
right.
You know, so they're not into They're into paying for the stock when it's a distressed asset. They're not into paying list price for that.
Which, the biggest emotional touch point on that one is probably Charlie Morton. Yeah. And, you know, they came in, they gave him the car wash. He ends up being way better in a bigger role in a World Series championship than anybody would have thought. And then they let him go, and then Charlie Morton goes on to continue to be really good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the tough part of it.
Yeah.
It does, okay... You're really good at turning distressed assets into good assets, but then at some point, all right, you either got to pay for that asset or let it go and trust that you can do it again. So they can do it again with another Kikuchi, and yet those prospects are gone forever.
They are. Yeah. Well, and the minor league system, I mean, you're running out of guys to trade
right.
for the Kikuchis of the world, you know?
That's where the Kikuchi, in a lot of ways, feels like the last big swing that you could have taken before you have to genuinely start anew.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that you have to tear it down and, you know, tank or anything like that, but in terms of championship windows or whatever else it might be, it does feel like a turning point. You're either going to get a World Series championship out of it and it was totally worth it, or look, the pipeline is what it is.
Yeah.
Let's just go ahead and not worry about that. We'll address that in 2025.
Yes. Yes. The latest on Alex Bregman from Bob Nightingale of USA Today is that the Astros have offered 6 years, $156 million. So that is right. That's like a few million more than the Matt Chapman deal. That was the deal.
Yeah.
That was the deal that I think you and I were in agreement on this. Like, that's probably Bregman's, at least in negotiation, his starting point, because he's very similar to Matt Chapman, but he's a year younger, a little better offensively. Won a gold glove this year, so he's on that level with Chapman defensively, assuming the team that signs him puts him at third base. Chapman was 6 years, 151. The Astros went, according to Bob Nightingale, 6 years, 156.
I guess
looking for $200 million, supposedly.
I think that sometimes it can feel daunting if you think about, oh, it's the Texans or it's the Astros versus the entire league and competing services for Bregman. Realistically, it's the Astros versus two or three teams that might be saying, you know what, we need to just really stretch here and go, we need to jump over this hurdle, and we need a guy with lots of playoff experience, a veteran, et cetera, et cetera, to where we're maybe willing to pay a little bit more than we think his performance justifies.
Yep.
That's who they're competing with. Yep. So who is that team? And, you know, are they going to offer more years or what have you than the Astros?
The Red Sox are the team that's rumored. Like, the rumor is, you know, according to Nightingale, I believe, the only teams that are really, like, plugged in right now with Bregman are the Astros and the Red Sox.
Now, is it fair to be optimistic or encouraged by the fact that even in offering a six-year deal, that's stretching for the Astros?
I think so.
Way more than they have in the past.
I think it tells you what they think of Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
Even when times were good, they were in a considerably better position as an organization when Carlos Correa became a free agent. You know, they didn't have Abreu mm-hmm. on the books yet. They didn't have Montero on the books. They hadn't made those bad decisions yet.
They had somebody waiting in the wings that they felt really good about.
Pena, yeah. And they offered 5 years, $160 million to Carlos Correa. So the Astros are not even subjective. Like, they're in a worse place right now than they were a couple years ago. Pipeline, roster, mm-hmm. aging roster, things like that. Guys injured, all that stuff, dead money. That they stretched to 6 years for Alex Bregman, I think, says a lot about what they think about Bregman. Who knows how much influence Jose Altuve's comments about bringing Bregman back have had on this situation as well. Altuve, who's never vocal about anything having to do with bringing guys back, like, stood on a table for Alex Bregman in the offseason.
Yeah, that probably is the most notable thing, just from an emotional standpoint alone, that Altuve is the classic man. When he speaks, you listen. Mm-hmm. He's not going to say a whole lot. He's never going to say anything controversial. This might be the furthest he's ever ventured out onto that ledge in terms of just putting it out there, you know, airing dirty laundry, anything else like that. Altuve feels very strongly about this.
I can't express this enough. There is no good solution if Alex Bregman walks out the door at third base. There's not. There's nobody you feel good about in the organization right now.
I'm gonna start irresponsibly claiming that Jose Altuve is the one that fired Reggie Jackson.
Okay.
Because Reggie didn't actually get fired, and Altuve hasn't been tied to it at all, but it's something I want to believe.
Put it out
that
there.
Altuve walked into a boardroom wearing his uniform and spikes and said, "You gone. You gone. You gone." Altuve's taking control of his organization.
If you tweeted that, that would be more true than half the stuff that pops up on our timelines these days.
Just flat out claim it.
Yeah. That's all it is, man.
I can't. I spend too much time fact-checking things these days. I can't even. I can't. It's, I can't anymore.
I know.
I just like, oh, this, like, wow. Oh, a million people have liked this. It must be from a legitimate account, right? Yeah. Clearly says it's a satire account. Let me look at the comments.
Right.
Oh, the first 100 comments are people who don't realize this is a satire account.
Well,
and now it's being regurgitated as fact.
Satire accounts are allowed to have blue check marks too now if they want to pay for them, you know?
And then in the bio, it'll be like down at the very end of the bio,
satire
it's like,
account.
By the way, this is a satire
right,
account.
Right.
It's tough, man. It's rough out there.
Tough out on those social streets. Text message, was it worth it to lose Loper Fido in the Kikuchi trade? I'm fine with the Kikuchi trade. That's where I stand. You're less fine with it than I am. You go into that deal knowing it's a rental, and everybody, including myself, thought they gave up too much. As it turns out, none of those guys are really doing anything for Toronto right now, and you got the best version of Yusei Kikuchi, you know?
This is where I am with this. I will very transparently say that this is hindsight reasoning, and yet I've felt this way the entire time. Like, look, you're putting them out there on the table. You're making your big move. It's got to work out.
Yeah.
And it worked out individually. Yes,
right.
The player was magnificent. But the sum total of it for the GM, you're being judged on a multi-year basis. So the sum total of it was that was a bad move for the organization because you didn't get the desired team results out of it, and now you're you're weakened somewhat as an organization.
Yep. Pettycast. We get petty. We cite impressive pettiness out there. There's a lot of pettiness.
I feel so petty right now.
There's a lot of pettiness.
I'm
going to
be the worst version of myself.
Get your petty on right now. We're going to do that. We do the weekly Pettycast coming up next.